It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, the fire sale is complete. Welcome to the post-baseball trade deadline edition, episode 733 of Rico Bronya. I am your host, Evan Roberts. This is not the day we dreamt of. I think we were dreaming of something similar to last year or something similar to 2022. When you've got a good team, you're looking to add. Maybe we're disappointed because we didn't do enough, but it's almost like a revitalizing a baseball season. You got a good team, you add a couple of pieces, and you begin that final push. Of course, this season has been an unmitigated disaster, one of the worst seasons in the history of the franchise. And so we have known for a while that this day was coming, the day in which the New York Mets took everything that was in their house and said, let's sell it. Let's sell as much as we possibly can. And they sold a lot. I've tried to keep track. I'm writing it all down. If we include David Peterson from a few weeks ago, you've got David Peterson, you've got AJ Minter, you've got Freddie Peralta, you've got Brooks Raley, you've got Waskar Brazoban, you have Luke Weaver, you have Clay Holmes, you have Tyrone Taylor. I'm not going to include Ben Rortvedt, who most people forgot was even in the Mets minor league system. The Mets took eight guys, and not just eight guys, but eight guys that had different levels of value to this team and traded them all away. And they stripped it apart, and we will go through all of the returns, what my initial reaction to all these deals are, and really what our expectations should be. Because again, this is very different than what we experienced last year, where we were looking up the names of the guys we traded, saying, hey, is this worth it for Ryan Helsley? Is this worth it for Cedric Mullins? Is this worth it for Tyler Rogers? And all those guys were rentals. And we knew no matter what those young players turn into, because they are lottery tickets, it's what are you going to get in this short burst? What are you going to get in this short period of time? If these guys are helpful and the Mets win a championship, then it doesn't matter what those guys turn into. But obviously, if they don't help you win, and we know what happened last year, not making the playoffs, then those pieces, those lottery tickets you traded away could come back and haunt you years from now, and we will almost forget what we got for them. This is the complete opposite. Look, other than Luke Weaver and Waskar Brazoban, who I will put in a different bucket, I don't think the Mets were given much of a choice when it came to even Clay Holmes and Tyrone Taylor and Brooks Raley and Freddie Peralta and AJ Minter and even David Peterson, because they're free agents at the end of the year. And if the Mets have a level of interest in bringing any of those guys back, and I happen to have some interest in bringing a few of them back, we'll see if David Stearns and the Mets share that. You can always bring them back. It doesn't mean it's a sure thing. It doesn't even mean it's likely. But I would rather walk away with some pieces, with some lottery tickets, with some prospect capital, and then take the chance that you can bring these guys back whenever the MLB offseason, the real MLB offseason, occurs. Let me start with Luke Weaver, because that was the one that was a little different, because he is signed for next season. Look, I don't know much about Sammy Stafura. I've done my research in that. He was actually a Reds prospect. They traded him to Pittsburgh a year ago for Cabrian Hayes. He's a middle infielder. He was the ninth best prospect in the Pirates farm system. And the Pirates, according to Fangraphs, have the 11th best farm system. And he also is a local kid who grew up as a Met fan, which, fine. I know the Mets have added a couple of guys like that in these trades over the last couple of days, including Gary Gill-Hill, one of the pieces they got for Freddie Peralta. Those are nice stories, but they don't mean much. It's like David Stearns. David Stearns grew up as a Met fan. Nobody cares. That's a nice story when a guy is hired, just like it's a nice story when a guy is acquired. At the end of the day, none of it matters. You have to perform. So when I read that about Stafford and how pumped up he is, that's great. I mean, good for him. It would be cool if any of us as Ricoers and diehard Met fans ever made the major leagues and got traded to the Mets. Yeah, it'd be a lifelong dream. So I'm happy for him. But it is all about performance and what he can turn into. And the reason that's the trade I start with that I'm not in love with or was a necessity is the fact that Luke Weaver is the kind of guy who I feel better about putting together another good year out of the bullpen than a lot of other relievers. Relievers are volatile. They really are. But I thought to trade Luke Weaver, who had put together such a good season, and really, ever since the Yankees converted him to a relief role in 2024, has actually been pretty good. He had that spurt last season with the Yankees in which I don't know if he was tipping his pitches or just not agreeing with the Yankee philosophy on what pitches to throw. But for the most part, for the 3 years he's been a full-time reliever, he's been really consistent. And when you looked at his salary and you looked at kind of that personality that he has to pitch in New York, whether it's to close games out, which he wasn't given the chance to do this season with Devin Williams, or pitch in the seventh inning or pitch in the eighth inning, I thought Luke Weaver was one of those guys that would make you feel pretty sturdy and solid about the Met bullpen in 2027. So to trade him, I thought the return had to be really good. It's one player who's the 10th best prospect in a 10th ranked farm system. What does that mean? Like, is Stafura going to ever come up here and impact this team? Who the hell knows? Are they going to use him as a chip for another trade? Maybe. But I don't know if that was worth trading away somebody that I thought had a chance to be a solid part of the 2027 team. The Met bullpen is going to have holes all over the place. And I know that the next 2 months is going to be a big audition, which we'll go through towards the end of the Rico, the guys who are going to take some of these roster spots away. But Devin Williams is your certainty. And that's pretty much it. There's nothing else. And so it would have been nice if you believe what the Mets say, if you believe what Steve Cohen has said, and you believe what David Stern says, which is, hey, we're trying to compete in 2027. This is not a complete rebuild. This is not a complete teardown. We are really going to try to compete in 2027. And actions speak louder than words. If that's the truth, if that's really the game plan, I don't know if it was worth trading Luke Weaver for a middle infield prospect. I don't. Now, Stafura's got a lot of potential, and he may grow as a prospect. Maybe he even adds more value to the value he currently has by having a strong finish to this season. And again, they use him in a future trade. We talked about how David Stearns has done that with some of his past trades that he's made. But Sammy Stafura is 21 years old. He'll be 22 during the offseason. Right now, he's playing at single A. Single A. And while he's produced at single-A Greensboro with a 300 average and a 1,000 OPS in 47 games, and he's hit 19 home runs, so the numbers are fantastic. It's single-A. This is not someone who's going to impact the Major League roster probably until 2029 if it ever happens, which is why, despite him being a nice story, a New York story, I kind of view him as probably someone that they're going to use as a trade chip down the road. Maybe not this offseason. Maybe it takes longer than that. We saw that with some of the pieces they got back in 2023 in the Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer trades. But that's the one trade that I pause on and I hesitate. Because building a bullpen, while very fickle and very volatile, and I'm the first one to say that, you like to have at least a couple of arms you feel good about. And the fact that they made the decision a few hours earlier to trade Waskar Brazemont, another guy that would have fit that bill, you're putting a lot of pressure. If you really are competing in 27 or 28, you're putting a lot of pressure on A, developing young guys, and then B, adding in free agency. And I have to admit it, I've already done it. And this is not something I want to do this early, but I already have. I'm already glancing at the 2027 MLB free agents when it comes to relief pitchers. Like, why wouldn't I? And I'll give you a preview, and I'm not sure the Mets would go in this direction because they're already paying Devin Williams a lot of money. Do they go the closer route? Do they say, hey, we'll build around two or three kind of closer-type arms and then go with the youth? But Raisel Iglesias is going to be a free agent at 37 years old, coming off of making $16 million a year. Pete Fairbanks is having a bad year for the Marlins, but maybe you take a flyer on him on a short-term deal. Obviously, you could bring back A.J. Minter and Brooks Raley. David Bednar has had a very good year for the New York Yankees. Do the Mets try to poach another former Yankee? Do they go that route? Outside of that, Emilio Pagano is a player option. You could go Jason Adam is a free agent and is due to make a decent amount of money in free agency. But that's really the guys that jump out at you, just looking up and down the list of potential free agents. But they're probably going to have to add two or three guys that route. Now, you could mix in a trade here and there, but if you're mixing in a trade, you could ask yourself, well, is it worth trading prospects for relief pitcher when you could have just kept Luke Weaver or Oscar Brazoban. So that's why I hesitate to even say the trade market, because you just explore the trade market by dumping these guys. So the Weaver one, I really hesitate on. I have a lot of confidence, or at least I have more confidence in Weaver putting together a good to solid 2027 as I would a lot of the other up and down relievers. And they picked up part of the salary, which showed you that they really like the kid they got back in Stafura, because they didn't need to pick up that much money. But I guess they wanted to enhance the prospect they were getting back, especially with a small market team like Pittsburgh, by enticing them by paying more of his very reasonable salary, especially for the kind of pitcher he is. So I hesitate on excitement or even approval of the trade of Luke Weaver. The Oscar Brazoban one, I don't feel as strongly about, and I'll tell you why. Because of Brazoban's age, he's 36 years old. He has had a great year this year. He has been really valuable to this Met bullpen. I don't have the same level of confidence in Luke Weaver that I do Oscar Brazoban. Like, it would not surprise me if Brazoban has a crash down to earth season, especially at the age of 36. Now, the return they got doesn't excite you, but they do add two potential relievers that could help this team down the road. One is Zach Franklin, who is not a top 30 prospect. So when you look at a lot of the guys they got, most of them are top 30 prospects in said organization. Zach Franklin was not, but he was pitching in the minor leagues this season with the Chicago White Sox. He's 27 years old, so he's not that young. And at AAA, had a 4.5 ERA. So he wasn't dominating down there, but one thing Zach Franklin was doing was striking out a lot of guys, was striking about 12 guys per nine. Franklin feels like one of the guys who I'd put on the active roster and say, show us what you got. Let's see if you can be a part of the Met bullpen in 2027. He has never made the major league, so it'd be his major league debut. But again, he's close enough to the major league level, having thrown 45 innings at AAA. And when you think about all the roster spots the Mets are going to have to fill over the next 24 hours going into their series against Cleveland, Franklin is one of the very few guys, probably the only guy, that they acquired that I look at and say, put him in the major leagues. I guess the guy they got from LA, who I don't really include in this, Chase McDermott, he is the DFA'd relief pitcher who does have major league experience, who the Mets got for Ben Roethlisberger, which I don't even include in this trade deadline. But if you want to include him, I think McDermott would probably be another guy that you say, all right, you got 2 months, show us what you got. But I would think that Zach Franklin is also one of those guys. The other guy they got is Gabe Davis. I was fascinated by. He was the 18th ranked prospect in the White Sox organization. And as of right now, I think he's going to be the 18th or 19th ranked prospect in the Mets organization. He's an incredibly tall guy, throws hard, had a fishing accident while in college, which I just needed to find out about. Because I'm learning about all these guys. And so I'm reading about Gabe Davis, not the wide receiver. And I come across he had an off-the-field incident in college. So I see that. And I'm like, boy, I hope it's nothing serious. So I read it was an injury. Okay, what was the injury? Hopefully it's not a Harrison Bader spot. And apparently he was fishing and injured his collarbone and shoulder. So I'd love to know more about that, but that happened in college. Gabe Davis does not have good numbers in the minor leagues, but when you see a guy that big with that kind of stuff, with that kind of velocity, you can see what the Mets are at least hoping they can turn him into. So Gabe Davis is a project. But I look at the Brazoban deal, and while I don't love it by any stretch, I don't hate it, and I understand it more than Luke Weaver, because I do think Brazoban feels more volatile as a reliever in 2027 for the Mets than Luke Weaver does. And look, they added two relievers, and who knows? Maybe Zach Franklin is a part of the Met bullpen in 2027, and relievers can come at you very quickly, so even though Gabe Davis feels like a project right now, I don't think it's inconceivable we see him at the major league level in a year and a half or 2 years. So that was the deal they made with the Chicago White Sox. The deal for Brooks Raley, this was very underwhelming. Now, they got two lottery tickets. That's how I refer to these guys. In John Spykerman, who's a 23-year-old outfielder who was the 27th ranked prospect in the Phillies farm system and will have that similar ranking with the Mets. But they also picked up a reliever who is not ranked in the Phillies' top 30 named Luke Gaberish, who has a 5 ERA at single A. He's actually a starting pitcher, to be fair, not a relief pitcher, though the Mets can convert him at any moment. A 23-year-old single A pitcher with a 5 ERA. And I admit, that's all I know. That doesn't feel like someone that's going to stick around. That doesn't feel like someone who ever makes the major leagues. John Spykerman feels like a project. He was a third-round pick in 2024. Right now in single A, he's hitting 252 with a 755 OPS. Apparently a very toolsy guy, good defender, a lot of speed, has a badass name in John Spykerman. But I was surprised, and I try not to be surprised with the trade deadline because I've really told myself, and I've said it here on the Rico, that the returns are not going to be great. So don't set your bar that high that the return is going to be great. But yet, you know, Brooks Raley's been such a good reliever. He's had a really good year. He had a great weekend. He finished his tenure with the Rico I'm the Man Right Now star of the series. You traded him to a division rival in the Philadelphia Phillies, and there's nothing really to sink your teeth in. Again, these guys could 3 years from now, you know, make a major impact and we'll laugh about how great of a trade it is. I acknowledge that. But at least in this moment, the 27th ranked prospect, a single A outfielder hitting 252 and a single A starting pitcher who's 23 years old with a 5 ERA, it just doesn't feel exciting. It doesn't feel intoxicating. But I will tell you what excited me. And again, as much as I try to convince myself to not get too down on trades for single A lottery tickets, I also don't want to get too excited about trading for prospects because ultimately they are prospects. But Clay Holmes needed to get them a real return. Considering the way he pitched prior to his injury, considering he doesn't make a lot of money, considering how many teams seem to be hot for him, they needed to walk away, in my opinion, with a better return than what they got for Freddie Peralta. Not that the Freddie Peralta return was garbage. They got back three top 30 ranked prospects in a top 10 system in the Tampa Bay Rays. They walked away with a couple of interesting pieces, to say the least. But Clay Holmes needed to provide something, I don't know, more exciting. Something you can sink your teeth into. And yes, Tyrone Taylor was in this trade, so it was a two for one. So I don't want to ignore Tyrone Taylor because he ended up being a really good Met. More on him later. But they ended up with a top 100 prospect. And I wasn't sure through all the pieces that they were trading, they were going to end up with that. They end up with Jefferson Rojas, the second ranked prospect in the Chicago Cubs system and the 63rd ranked prospect in all of baseball. And keep in mind, how good of a return this is, at least on paper, at least in terms of where a guy is ranked. As quickly as Luke Gaberish could jump up a list, as quickly as Gabe Davis can jump up a list, I acknowledge Jefferson Rojas can go down a list. Also, all you got to do is look at Marcelo Meyer, who the Red Sox traded for a reliever. This was one of the top prospects in all of baseball months ago. So it can change really quickly. But the Mets, up until the Jefferson Rojas trade, the best prospect just in a team's system was Sammy Stafura, the guy they got for Luke Weaver, who was ranked 9th. Before that, the best rated prospect they got in any trade from any system was actually also with Chicago when they got Cole Mathis in the trade for David Peterson. He was ranked 13th. And then they got Aiden Smith, who was ranked 15th. Outside of that, all of the other guys were either not in the top 30 in each organization or not in the top 20. So to get the second-ranked prospect in a farm system that is considered, you know, middle of the pack, depends on where you look. You can go Pipeline, you can go Fangraphs. I was looking at Fangraphs to see where they're viewed. And to get a guy who's a top 100 prospect and is the 63rd ranked prospect in baseball. And not only that, and maybe it just shows you where this system is, he's the number one prospect for the Mets now. He passes Jonah Tong, according to MLB Pipeline. To get a player like that is at least exciting. A player like that is one that you can at least fantasize about helping this team. And so while I like Clay Holmes, and I would have really been happy if they worked out a long-term extension with him. That would have been nice and have Clay Holmes a part of this rotation moving forward. to turn him into a top 100 prospect, I cannot sneeze at, and I can not look down on. So I like it. And Tyrone Taylor, look, I like Tyrone Taylor as a fourth outfielder. It is what it is. If that's what it took to actually walk away with a top 100 prospect, I'm good with it. I'm probably most excited about the Clay Holmes trade, as much as I like Clay, than any other trade that they made. Here are the infos on Jefferson Rojas, the stats on Jefferson Rojas. He's 21 years old. He has spent the entire year at AA, 91 games, 270 average, 799 OPS, 15 home runs, 57 RBIs, 17 stolen bases. He's played 26 at short, 56 at third, and two games at second base. So he has been all over the infield for the Chicago Cubs. That's a guy who, A, could be the part of a big trade. No doubt about it, because you are talking about a top 100 prospect. And number two, maybe we're looking at as the second baseman or third baseman a year and a half from now. If he can finish strong at AA, I don't think it's crazy that he gets on our radar for being a part of the 2027 team. Feels like 2027 is going to be tough to say. The good news is there won't be a season, so it ain't going to be that difficult to say. That feels like a very good return. I wasn't sure they'd get a top 100 prospect, and they were able to do it. So here's what we're talking about. We're talking about Cole Mathis from the Chicago Cubs for David Peterson, Billy Amick and Bruin Agbayani from the Minnesota Twins, Aiden Smith, Emelian Petre, and Gary Gill-Hill from the Rays for Freddie Peralta, John Spikerman and Luke Gabrish from the Philadelphia Phillies for Brooks Raley, Gabe Davis and Zach Franklin from the Chicago White Sox for Waskar Brazoban, Sammy Stafura for Luke Weaver and the Pittsburgh Pirates, Jefferson Rojas for Clay Holmes and Tyrone Taylor from the Chicago Cubs, and if you want to include it, Chase McDermott for Ben Rortvedt and the Los Angeles Dodgers. They got a lot back. Now, let's do a little lesson, a little walk through Mets history in terms of selling guys off. The last time the Mets sold guys off was back in 2023. This was a more controversial sell-off back in 23 because there was a belief, at least I remember having it, that, hey, they're in it. Why not give this team a little bit more time? This Met team made it easy. They were so bad and so out of it that there was no debate. We never had to have intense Rico Brogna debates on buying or selling. Had that in 23, did not have that in 2026. Ultimately, in 2023, we think of Scherzer and Verlander, but the Mets sold seven guys. So not that far off from what they sold here. Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, David Robertson, Mark Canha, Tommy Pham, Dominic Leone, and Eduardo Escobar. Let's take a look at what they got at that trade deadline and play a little where are they now? Just to get perspective on what you get back for these trade deadline deals. Max Scherzer was for Luis Angel Acuna. He obviously contributed when Lindor got hurt in 2024, was a bench piece in 2025, and ultimately was shipped to the White Sox for Luis Robert Jr. So the book is closed. Obviously, the Mets did not trade Luis Robert Jr. before the deadline. I'll get to that in a little bit. They didn't get a lot back. They tried. They paid a lot of money. Thank you, Steve Cohen, for the effort. But Luis Angel Acuna made a minimal impact at the major league level for the parts of two seasons he was here and ultimately was traded for a guy who also didn't make an impact in Luis Robert Jr. For Justin Verlander, they got back Drew Gilbert and Ryan Clifford. Ryan Clifford is still here. He's a top 10 prospect in the Met farm system. I have to see where he's ranked right now after all of these moves. So the jury is still out on him. No doubt Ryan Clifford can still turn into something, even though his batting average down at AAA has hovered around the Mendoza line, but he certainly has pop. Story not done yet on Ryan Clifford, but the story is done on Drew Gilbert, who's now a major leaguer with the San Francisco Giants and was used as a piece when the Mets traded for Tyler Rogers. By the way, Ryan Clifford, as of right now, is the seventh-ranked prospect. He'll probably drop down to number eight once Jefferson Rojas is kind of placed in there. So the Verlander trade's still out there. They used Drew Gilbert as a piece for Tyler Rogers, who was halfway decent last year for the New York Mets trade deadline deal, and Ryan Clifford, TBD. They traded David Robertson for two very young players, Ronald Hernandez, who is currently in Brooklyn, hitting .213 with seven home runs and 34 RBIs, catching, DHing, and playing first base, and Marco Vargas, who is at AA, hitting .210 with a .621 OPS. I know those numbers are not impressive, but Hernandez is only 22. Vargas is only 21. They haven't developed into big prospects. Neither are top 30 prospects as of this moment, but they're still around. So for now, the return on David Robertson, TBD. When they traded Mark Canha, they got a relief pitcher named Justin Jarvis, who after the 2024 season became a free agent and is gone. For Tommy Pham, they got a 19-year-old infielder named Jeremy Rodriguez, who is still in the Met farm system. He's in single A, and he's only 19 years old. So even more so than Vargas and Hernandez, you never know. Maybe the Tommy Pham trade will be a forgotten about gem because Jeremy Rodriguez is still around. When they traded Dominic Leone, they got back Jeremiah Jackson, who the Mets let go in free agency in 2024, and he is currently a major leaguer, putting up, you know, backup numbers for the Baltimore Orioles. And then finally, Eduardo Escobar. They got back two pitchers, Coleman Crow and Landon Marceau. Landon Marceau, I think, is out of baseball. But Coleman Crow was traded to the Brewers for Tyrone Taylor and Hadrian Hauser. So, I mean, that one worked. That was a good one. That's probably the best move made of all of these pieces that got back. So what do we learn from the exercise of 2023? The odds are these pieces aren't going to turn into anything. But all you do is need to hit on one or two of them, and you'll feel like it was a success. And again, with David Robertson, which is kind of crazy, he did not pitch this season, and I think he's announced his retirement. I'm not sure. The Mets still have two guys in their early 20s from that trade. Tommy Pham, they still have a teenager from that trade. So a lot can change with a lot of the pieces they got back. They can become bigger prospects. They can be used in trades that we will then break down, or they may just go away and become nothing. And there's a good chance that more than half of those guys will eventually do that. Now, as far as Luis Robert Jr. is concerned, I'm surprised they didn't trade him because there didn't need to be a bar on Luis Robert Jr. And I also see there being no benefit of him being on the major league roster. I'd rather call up Nick Morabito and give him playing time, which they should anyway with Tyrone Taylor being traded. But I didn't see a need for Robert Jr. to be here. If the Mets had any interest in bringing him back, they could as a free agent. But it didn't matter to me if we were talking about a 19-year-old young single-A prospect lottery ticket. I thought you had to trade Luis Robert Jr. I didn't see any benefit to keeping him around. My only thought was there wasn't as much interest in him as was reported, and maybe teams wanted the Mets to take care of the buyout on Robert Jr. because it is a team option on him next season. And maybe teams are like, he's not worth paying even the buyout for Luis Robert Jr. So it's possible money was a factor in that. I think what's really important, though, because he's here, is to use him the right way. And what I mean by using him the right way is he cannot take serious playing time away from any of the younger players. Can you still play him? Sure. There'll be moments that make sense. But the priority of the 2026 Mets over the final 2 months of the season is going to be developing AJ Ewing and developing or continuing to develop Carson Bench. It's for Nick Morabito to 1,000% get at-bats. Nick Morabito needs to be on the major league roster and get playing time. Doesn't have to be every single day, but the priority needs to be the youth. I wouldn't mind, and I guess this is where Lou Bob would benefit, I wouldn't mind seeing AJ Ewing play second base because Marcus Semien should not be guaranteed a damn thing on this team in 2027. I get he makes a lot of money. He's a good leader, blah, blah, blah. You should not be guaranteed playing time just based on your salary. No. And so I think you need as much flexibility as possible, and that would include AJ Ewing getting a look at second base over the final 2 months of this season. But Luis Robert Jr. being here, mildly surprised, just because it sounded like there was interest in him. And if there was interest in him, why wouldn't you take whatever you can get? That would have been my view. Kodai Senga, I never expected that to happen. There was a report the other day that there was some interest in Kodai Senga. I got a plan, though, for Kodai. And I hinted at this two Ricos ago, but now I am full bore. I'm going to be invested the way some of you guys are, not all. I'm sure many of the people consuming the trade deadline Rico will never watch another Met game the rest of the season. And that is fine, your prerogative. But for the diehards, for those that will continue to ask themselves, why am I still watching? Everything needs to be about 2027. Almost view the final 2 months as an extended spring training. And one thing I want to see is Kodai Senga as a relief pitcher. And not just any relief pitcher. I want Kodai Senga to be the eighth inning guy. I'd even give him closer opportunities, but obviously Devin Williams is still here and Devin Williams is likely going to want to close. Kodai Senga is due $15 million next year. And nothing should be guaranteed to him because he makes a lot of money, like I just said about Marcus Semien. But I have him on my roster. I'm not DFAing him because of that salary that I may never have to pay because there could be a full lockout in 2027, or I may only have to pay part of it because half the season is gone. Bottom line is the idea of DFAing Kodai Senga, something I wanted to do a month ago, or I suggested a month ago, out the window. So now what do you do with him? And we could be prideful and say, don't pitch him. I want to test him. I want to see him out of the bullpen as an eighth inning guy. And let's say he's impressive. Let's say Kodai Senga gets into a groove. He can actually pitch back-to-back days, and he's nasty. He lets it all hang out. The velocity's up. He's dominating as a reliever. Well, that's a great thing because the $15 million that Kodai makes next year is a sunk cost. So if he's going to be good at something, even if he's going to be overpaid as a $15 million a year reliever, fine. Let's see what we got. Now, I'm not saying that I'm confident in any of this. I'm not. But I have more interest and I guess hope of Kodai Senga as a reliever than Kodai Senga starting. And here, I'll give you another reason. If you start Senga, which you could do, I mean, the Mets just traded Freddy Peralta. As good as Robert Stock was in his feel-good start on Sunday, I don't think we need to see Robert Stock every 5 days. No offense, bro. Great story, but the Mets are evaluating next year. Are you really going to sit there evaluating a 36, 37-year-old feel-good story? If Kodai Senga goes into the rotation because the Mets have an open spot and they say, ah, screw it, let him start. What's the difference? By the way, Stock is 36, he'll be 37 in November. So 37 for next season. And Senga pitches well in the rotation. Is any of us going to buy it? Is any of us going to say, you know what? We got a rotation now. Kodai Senga should be a part of this rotation in 2027. No one's going to say that. No one's going to trust him. But if we're talking about out of the bullpen, if we're talking about possibly playing well in a new role that the Mets could certainly use because they just traded everybody in their bullpen, I think we could talk ourselves in to, hey, why not? We got nothing to lose. So I'd love to see it. That is one strong opinion I have in terms of the what do you do now aspect of things. Now, Pete Hoffman tweeted, the great Pete Hoffman, who produces the Rico Brilliant. Great job today. He's producing the Carton Show in the midst of the trade deadline while Big Mac's having a mental breakdown because Brian Cashman twiddled his thumbs and somehow was able to put this Rico Brilliant together. Hoff has suggested, and I'm speaking for him because I think he's traveling now. Hoff suggested just DFAing Luis Robert Jr. The only reason I still lean towards not is because why not just keep him and not play him on any kind of consistent basis? Like, you need to fill out this roster, right? And with Tyrone Taylor gone, I think the Mike Tauchman is an option. I guess Mike Tauchman would be one guy, but Nick Morabito would be the guy I'd call up. So you're getting rid of him for what reason? Because you need Mike Tauchman up here? Because you need Jehan Bey up here? I wouldn't play him all the time, But I don't feel the urgency that now, okay, you couldn't trade him, just DFA his ass. I don't feel that.
Well, first of all, my there's a big issue going on here. It's not just Luis Robert Jr. It's Jorge Polanco and Marcus Semien are still here too. Like, every mistake that was made is still here, in offensively speaking. And I don't really want to see him play anymore. Like, I'm done with that. I understand you got to fill the roster, but you do have whatever you want to say. There are prospects down there. Like, bring up the Tauchmans of the world, who's not a prospect. But, like, if he's here, let him play. We know what Luis Robert Jr. is. I don't want there to be any, and I mean this at all, in every single way possible, nicest way possible, I don't want there to be any hope that Luis Robert Jr. could turn into a decent player where maybe David Stearns goes, you know what? I think we should give him another chance. It didn't work out, but next year it is. I don't want that. I don't. We've had the experiment already. So that's why I want him gone and give other people opportunities.
So the other guys that could get opportunities, Nick Morabito, who should be called up, Christopher Morel, who the Mets picked up a few weeks ago, has been tearing it up at AAA, 338, 8 home runs in 21 games. Would you want to take a look at Christopher Morel?
I mean, not saying that I think he's going to be the savior, but yeah, I'd much rather see Christopher Morel. Listen, I'm not trying to say anything about Stearns, but he does have like a tell. He wanted to get Christopher Morel last year in a trade, if I'm correct. So he likes these guys. Well, let's test it out. I don't think he's going to work out, but I'd prefer to see Christopher Morel because I've seen the best of Luis Robert Jr. and it's not good enough.
Yeah, I get your point. I just, the only guys that I would say I need to see, and if he's blocking him from being on the roster, would be legitimate young prospects. And the only guy that I feel that way about is Nick Morabito. You know, Mike Tauchman, Christopher Morel, they're in a lot of ways Luis Robert Jr. You know what I mean? Like, they're major leaguers. They've had some levels of success. The big difference is they don't make a lot of money. That's really the big difference. I may get to you, by the way. Like, I think there may be a moment where I say, all right, just DFA this guy. It's not worth it. I'm just not here right now. I think in this moment with Tyrone Taylor gone, the logical replacement is Nick Morabito. I hope it is. And I think that Robert Jr.'s playing time, and he wasn't playing back-to-back games anyway. I'd put more of an emphasis on my young guys playing. And look, Robert Jr. can play when Jorge Polanco doesn't. But Jorge Polanco does need to play. And the reason I say that is he's signed for next year. He's going to be on this team. And he's got to figure it out. Right now, he's got no value. And I'm not saying like getting hot's going to give him value, but he's going to be on this team next year. So hopefully he can figure out what's been really screwing him since he's come back from the IL. And that can be something he builds on going into next year. I'm not going to have confidence in that, but Polanco and Semien are going to play because they're going to be here next year. Doesn't mean every single day, but they're going to play.
Just think about this, and I don't know if you touched it already. I apologize. The Mets made 9 total moves in the past few days. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, I didn't even realize he was still on the team. I didn't even know he was on the team. But the point is, they made 9 moves. And they got rid of the bullpen, which they wanted to do. That was the best part of this team. And the only mistake that David Stearns got rid of was Freddie Peralta. Every other mistake he made this year, it's coming back next year. And Luis Robert Jr. is still on that list to come back next year.
No, he's not. He's not coming back next year. And if he does, it could possibly be on a minor league deal or a 1-year deal. The difference is those guys are signed for multiple years. And if you see what the Mets got for Freddie Peralta, what did you think they were getting for Jorge Polanco? They weren't getting anything. He's making $20 million a year and he's hitting .134, which is Howie Rose said so brilliantly the other day. It's not a batting average. It's the South Oyster Bay Expressway or whatever he said.
Listen, no, I didn't expect them to get anything for him. It's just one of these things where it's like this season was so bad and it just piles on. It's like we still have a lot of crap left over.
Yeah, but Hoff,
that hurts.
Jorge Polanco, Marcus Semien, the Bo Bichette question, those are all off-season things. Like, they were never being traded at the trade deadline. The trade deadline is not those kinds of moves. It's the guys who have value and trying to maximize it. That's what the deadline is for. I think when we get to the offseason, and certainly when we have a better idea of what the CBA is going to look like, so really whenever they settle, because I do have an observation. I'll get more into this as the weeks go on. I am now believing that this offseason will actually not occur prior to the lockout. So remember in 21-22, there was an offseason, like the Mets signed Starling Marte and Max Scherzer, and then everything stopped. And then after the lockout, I kind of have a feeling there's going to be a stalemate. Like very few signings, very few moves, maybe trades. Like I think they'd be trades because they're not impacted as much on salary and salary structure. But I kind of have a feeling that between the end of the World Series and December 2nd, it is not going to be what we saw in 2021. That's just a prediction, but we'll get more to that later. I just don't think those guys, as bad as they've been, and they're all disasters, I don't think there were ever anything that you were going to settle at the trade deadline. The trade deadline is selling off guys with value, and pretty much that's what they did. They sold off the guys who had value to contending teams.
No, so you're saying that Tarik Skubal won't sign with the Dodgers until after the lockout?
I don't think Skubal's signing with the Dodgers. Like, I've always been under the impression that while they will trade for him or have a chance to trade for him, that he won't re-sign there because I don't think they're going to give another long-term contract. I know they'll try to defer it like they always do and try to sneak it in before the rules change, because the rules are going to change on some level. May not be a salary cap, but there's going to be different rules in the post-CBA world. But if I had to guess right now, my answer to that would be no. That's not going to happen. Let me read some of your emails, therico@gmail.com. Get a little impression on how the Met fans feel about this MLB trade deadline. A sell-off deadline. Not like the buying of the last couple of years. Let's go to Josh. He calls himself the Long Island Slim. Hey, Evan, everyone is obsessed with talking about how the Mets had a bad or blah deadline. This was played extremely well by David Stearns. Did anyone realize that when the lockout happens and the possibility of lost games, minor league baseball keeps going? The teams with the most prospects get fat. The teams with aging players shrink. Okay. All right. How about that one? Speaking of which, Steve writes, how would a lockout affect the minor leagues? If there's a lockout next season, what happens to the minor leagues? No one plays at all. I would love some insight if there are any differences. Apologies if this has been mentioned already. Love the pod. Maybe briefly, and I talked actually about this on WFAN and the way it impacts a certain Yankee prospect, but I'll bring it up to the Mets. If you are on a 40-man roster, you are considered a major leaguer, and you will not play any kind of baseball during the lockout. But there will be minor league baseball. If you are not on a 40-man roster and you are just a minor leaguer because they don't have the same union as the MLB Players Association, you would play baseball. So I think that there may be scenarios, and I think this affects the Mets actually more than the Yankees. We talked about it with George Lombard Jr., who is the Yankees' top prospect and is not on their 40-man roster. Would the Yankees consider not adding him to the major league roster at all this season because they want him to play minor league baseball? They fear that the season could be wiped out. Obviously, the Yankees should prioritize winning, even though their general manager forgot that catchers matter. I think that the Mets would look at certain guys, and I have to go through the entire roster, entire farm system, and see how they would handle it, but they would want to keep certain guys off their 40-man roster so they can play minor league baseball. So that would eliminate rushing somebody. Not that any of these prospects are ready, but let's take Jefferson Rojas as an example. I don't think he's going to be added to the 40-man roster. I'll have to double check. But you wouldn't rush, because once he's on the 40-man roster, my understanding is he can't play minor league baseball. So Ronnie Mauricio, who is right now playing in the minor leagues and playing well, isn't going to play minor league baseball. Nick Morabito, who's currently on the 40-man roster, would not play minor league baseball. I'm looking at the pitchers. Tobias Myers, not a surprise. Xavier Curry, Jonathan Pintaro, Dylan Ross, Jonah Tong. My understanding is that they would not play minor league baseball. So something to keep an eye on if there is a lockout, and it is significant. I mean, you want to develop guys. You don't want to necessarily not have them be able to pitch at all. Howie writes, Met fans are delusional. I'm reading the comments that Met fans are livid about the return for Minter, Brazoban, Raley, and Weaver. Let's see. We have an injury-prone lefty, a hard-throwing 36 going on 37-year-old, a 38-year-old going on a 39-year-old lefty, and a 32-year-old setup man who has a career 4.5 ERA. I know they're all having good years, but were they expecting multiple teams' top 10 prospects for those guys? I have two words for every Met fan who thinks keeping any of them is better. Aaron Loop. I love using the Loop example, so kudos, Howie. Loop had his best year of his career with the Mets. Everyone wanted the Mets to re-sign him during the offseason. He had a meh year afterward, and he was out of baseball after 2 years. Can we trust the farm development team to turn crappy lottery tickets those relievers fetched into something good? A.J. Ewing was a fourth-round pick and started 2025 as the Mets' 28th best prospect. Very true. Howie from Flushing. Yeah, I agree with you. The Luke Weaver thing to me is a little bit different because even though, yes, Luke Weaver is 32 years old with a career 4.5 ERA, that's not entirely fair because the early part of his career, he was a failed starting pitcher. And maybe you guys disagree. I just look at Weaver. If I'm making a scale of relief pitchers who are locked down, great, no worries, to I feel pretty good, to I have no confidence, to up and down, Luke Weaver is on the higher end of that scale. He's not quite Tyler Rogers. I think Tyler Rogers is one of the great examples on that scale, which is why I did want the Mets to keep him. Of course, they lost him to Toronto in free agency. So I thought with Weaver, you could have a high bar on if you're willing to trade him. You didn't have to trade him. You needed to say, is this prospect return good enough? And look, the kid that they got, I don't know. But it doesn't feel like it's good enough. It doesn't feel like that return is worthy when you've created a big hole in your bullpen. Jimmy writes, I wasn't surprised by the exodus of bullpen arms, but the lack of position player movement, however, restricted the market, was and also allows zero room for Ronnie Mauricio. I know most of the listeners don't want to hear this name, but he deserves these 2 months. I know there are numerous ways to use him. What I want to hear from you is how you think Brain will handle Ronnie's development for the rest of 2026. Does he get called up? And if so, is he afforded a real opportunity? I give Stearns a decent grade for the moves, but he left no room for Ronnie and yet plenty of room for Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos. So let's go through it with Ronnie Mauricio. He can play the infield. He can also DH. Bo Bichette is still here and you're not sitting him. No, he's due a lot of money. He's got a player option. I don't know how the Mets view Bo Bichette moving forward. And also, we don't know if Bo Bichette's going to exercise that option or not. I think he is a huge factor and huge question when it comes to the 2027 Mets. Marcus Semien is here, but like I said earlier, I do not think his bloated salary should guarantee him the everyday second base job. First base is an insane vacancy. Like, it is not being filled by anyone who's here. Brett Beatty is playing it. Jared Young has played it decently well. They acquired Cole Mathis in the trade from the Chicago Cubs. They acquired Billy Amick in the trade for AJ Minter just to throw more possibilities. Ryan Clifford is in AAA. But there is no exciting, real, or close option at first base. So first base is the position where you say, hey, that's the vacancy. What I would love to do, and I don't think it's realistic, is like I mentioned earlier with Polanco. I know he sucks, but he's making $20 million a year, and he's going to be on this team next year. And even though he shouldn't be guaranteed every day at-bats, like I said about Semien, he's going to play. He's barely played this season. You're going to try to get him going. Is there a way for Polanco to actually play first base? You know, the position they potentially signed him to play? And that could open up DH opportunities for Ronnie Mauricio? Or do you actually just throw Ronnie Mauricio at first base, a position he's never played? Do you sit Marcus Semien and say, Marcus, you're going to be on the team. You've had some injuries this year. Just sit for the rest of the year. We're going to let Ronnie Mauricio play second base every day. But I do agree that it would be nice for Ronnie Mauricio to get that chance to just play every single day. But how do you do it? Third base is not an option. Shortstop is not an option. So really it's, do you clear out DH for him? Do you tell Semien, just go on the IL, take the rest of the year off, or do you actually do the extreme idea of just stick him over at first base? But I do agree that a part of the frustration with Mauricio is he just hasn't been given an opportunity. Michael writes, guys, I wanted the Mets to extend Clay Holmes. I still don't understand why David Stearns seemed to have zero interest in that, but I'm surprisingly happy with the return. Rojas feels like the perfect competition to take third base from Brett Beatty and Mark Vientos. Side note, I do enjoy the flashbacks to what WFA and show say on big moves. That's accountability and sometimes humor. Bad call by Robin Edison. Robin Edison was a caller who said, Evan, I used to love you, but I hate when you play long-term predictions or old clips. And I said, okay, it's fine. Doesn't mean I'm going to listen to you. I love doing that. So thank you, Michael. It makes me feel good that you enjoy that every once in a while. And then finally, Michael writes, do you have a scorebook recommendation? I can't seem to find one I like. Oh, dude, I'm a Bob Carpenter guy. Right here. I'm holding up the book for our YouTube audience. And apparently Bob Carpenter is retired. And I heard a rumor, and I don't know if it's true, that Bob is considering not doing the scorebooks anymore, which I think would leave an incredible vacancy because I think he's the guy. I even flirted with the idea of making my own scorebook, and I was like, I can't do it. Bob Carpenter did it best. So I hope that's not the case because Bob is fantastic. He is great. So overall, what do I think of the MLB trade deadline? What do I think of how the Mets did? Number one, it's depressing. Like, this is a reminder, as much as you try to move on and talk about other things, it is a reminder that 2026 is an all-time disaster. This season was so embarrassing and so putrid that the Mets were so buried in August that they traded everybody away in a fire sale like we haven't seen in a long time. And it leads major questions into what the plan is for 2027. And what adds more wrinkles to the questions is the fact that there may not even be a season in 2027. So it was a depressing day. I thought overall we were able to walk away with a little bit of excitement because of the Jefferson Rojas deal. And I don't think they traded anybody that's irreplaceable. Freddie Peralta was never coming back. Minter or Raley, they could always bring back. Obviously, I made my case on Luke Weaver, and I think Clay Holmes may be someone they do try to bring back. I think that is certainly a possibility when you look at the guys they traded, most of which are free agents outside of Waskar Brazman and Luke Weaver. I don't think it's crazy that David Stearns tries to bring a few of these guys back. Tyrone Taylor wouldn't surprise. AJ Minter would. I would almost say, yeah, he's not coming back. But I think Brooks Raley, who is a two-time Met, when you think about the fact that he was gone, then they brought him back after the Tommy John surgery, Clay Holmes, Tyrone Taylor, those are the three guys that they traded away that I think have a real chance of coming back. And Tyrone Taylor was a good Met. You know, fourth outfielders don't get a lot of love, but they're valuable. And Tyrone Taylor, especially this season, really supplied in a lost season, in a bad season, some really cool moments. The home run against the Dodgers, the home run against the Yankees. Tyrone Taylor's hit 10 home runs this season. In the 2 years prior to this, he had a combined 9 home runs. So obviously, he ended up saving the best of himself for the very end. But Tyrone Taylor, solid, underrated Met for the brief time he was here. Brooks Raley pitched to a low 2 ERA. I think one of the best ERAs of any reliever in Met history. Minimum of, what, 100 innings, 150 innings. So he was a good Met. But the trade deadline was really a sign of, this sucks. But I give you, and this is not a positive, I wouldn't use the word positive. When the Mets play the Guardians on Tuesday night, it will be intriguing. Seeing the roster, seeing the new bullpen, kind of auditioning the new pieces. And it's going to be the bullpen because that's what they mostly traded a little bit in the rotation with Freddie being gone. Clay Holmes hasn't pitched in months, so you don't feel that one as much. The trade of Tyrone Taylor, you won't feel as much. It's only one piece. But the revamped Met bullpen will be something to watch. And there'll probably be a handful of games that the Mets would have won if they had their bullpen. And instead, it's a crap show because God knows who's filling it. I would assume that some of the names that we saw earlier this season will make their return. And like I mentioned, maybe one or two of the guys they traded for, specifically Chase McDermott and Zach Franklin, will actually go into this bullpen and they will get their audition. But anyhow, it's over. And now we get to focus on meaningless baseball for the final 2 months of the season. Programming note, David Stearns met the media on Monday night. I felt like when we do our let's hear what David Stearns had to say, Rico Bronya, we should give that a day. Let's react to it. Let's hear your reaction to it. And then we'll take a listen to what David Stearns had to say. So our David Stearns press conference edition of the Rico, episode 734, we will produce that for you on Tuesday. So you'll get to hear that press conference if you haven't, and our reaction to everything he had to say about the trade deadline 2026. Good job by Pete Hoffman, and thank you very much for hanging out with us on this very special, the Mets have sold everybody but the kitchen sink edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.